said that your education is extremely important. This is what I was getting at. Was this true according to the experience you had with the situation?
I thought perhaps you meant they had a traumatic experience and as a result they came back with psychiatric.
Oh, no. No. I didn't mean that.
Yes, it's very true. Navajos in great numbers during the war years went off the reservation to work.
Yes.
And for most of them, it was the first time in their lives, really, that they'd ever been very far. They perhaps had been to Gallup or Flagstaff or Holbrook or Winslow, Farmington, but they'd never lived and worked in areas remote from the reservation.
Like
Morenci, for example, the mines. There were great numbers of Navajos who worked in the copper mines at Morenci. In fact, there are still some there. Sort of a colony, I guess. They worked in the copper mines up in Bingham Canyon in Utah. They worked in mines on the reservation as well, the vanadium mine up around near Kayenta.
Were those the primary areas where they went?
Those were some of the areas. Many of them, of course, went to the agricultural areas of southern Arizona and Idaho, Utah, Colorado. A great number of them went up to Rico, Colorado, too, to work in the Rico Argentine mine. And there was quite a colony of Navajos at the Rico Argentine mine, and even in the period immediately following the war.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them were recruited from areas close to Shiprock. They used to go up there and work all week, and many of them came back down to their farms and so forth on the weekend. And
this primarily was not urban work then?
Not necessarily. Many of them went to California. Some of them to pick fruit, some of them as workers in the shipyards, and in other kinds of wartime industries. Really, what it was, what developed was a vacuum in menial types of work, that is, types of work that required little skill or training.
Yes.
The railroads, I should have mentioned, two great numbers went on the railroads. This vacuum developed, and of course the various industries concerned began beating the bushes for employees, and the Navajos, being even then a pretty populous tribe, had a large labor pool from which they could recruit workers. So the Navajos moved in to this vacuum in great numbers, and of course they were thrown in contact with non-English speaking people who couldn't speak Navajo, and it became quite apparent to them that in order for their children to live happily and prosperously, they were simply going to have to learn some of the things that people outside the reservation did. And certainly they were going to have to learn to speak English and understand it, because this constituted a great problem for Navajos living outside the reservation. They couldn't communicate with anyone except another Navajo. And the industrial operators had to have interpreters to reach them. Well, if the individual worker had a problem, it was very difficult for him to get that problem resolved. He couldn't go to the supervisor and outline his problem and get assistance because he couldn't speak to him. So there were many problems.
This was not the tremendous numbers of Indians who went into the Indian CCC in the 30s was merely really a drop in the bucket.
Well, yes, and it was local too, and didn't impose the same range of problems that were imposed by off-reservation working and living. Because here the people were working on the reservation. Most of them were living still in their own homes.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them weren't. Those were up in the forest cleaning up slash and that sort of thing, might be camped out or living in CCC camps. But basically it was still a local sort of a development. It wasn't a development of the type that put them in contact with other ethnic groups.
Mm-hmm. What would you say was the, this is not a very easy question to answer, but just offhand, would you say that most of those who went away for war work came back when the war was over?
Yes. I'd say that immediately after the cessation of hostilities, a great number of people came back to the reservation because they didn't have anywhere else to go. And in many instances, wartime industries had ceased operation by that time, and they were out of a job.
Right,
or
sure.
other peoples, other ethnic groups came back, and they also became competitors in the labor market. And this displaced lots of Navajos,
mm-hmm.
because some of them couldn't speak English yet. And obviously the employer, being interested in his own profits, was more inclined to hire people with whom he could communicate than people with whom he couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, lots of them came back to the reservation, and there was really a critical period of readjustment right after the war, from about 1946 or 7, well, 1947, down into the early 1950s. And it was during this period, of course, that the Red Cross was called upon, was very active in providing emergency food and clothing to Navajo people on the reservation, in which the Congress appropriated, made special appropriations of welfare funds to meet emergent situations on the reservation, because they had come back, and in many instances their herds had been quite seriously depleted during the war years. They just didn't keep them up. There simply were not the resources to support the population. There were no jobs on the reservation. And this was also the period when the Bureau launched the Employment Assistance Program, and in which they set up field offices in certain locations. One was in Salt Lake City, one was in Denver, one was in Los Angeles. I think there was one in Chicago even in that early period. There were four or five of them, and each of them had a small bureau staff, and the person in charge, along with his staff, had the responsibility for finding jobs into which Navajo laborers could be moved, and then with the funds that were appropriated for this purpose, they could be assisted in transporting their families, or in just transporting themselves to the point of employment. And this, of course, is what later turned into the relocation program.
Sure, I can see. Well, this is sort of the transition then between the war and the termination.
Yes.
Decade, so to speak, is it not?
Yeah. And it's the period during which Congress concerned itself with the Navajo Hopi Rehabilitation Act.
Mm-hmm.
And you find the Krug Report in 1948, I think it was, when it was finally printed and published. However, it was the outgrowth of a number of conferences, both locally on the reservation and in Washington, and a number of hearings that had been held by committees of Congress stretching from perhaps 1947 on down to the time the Krug Report came out. And of course, ultimately, Truman signed it in 1950, and the program got underway. And one aspect, of course, was relocation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think that, according to the reading that I've done, Willard Beatty, of course, in the 30s, was very much concerned with educating the Indian pupils, particularly those who went to the boarding schools, off-reservation boarding schools, for occupations which they could take up on the reservation when they finished school, like agricultural training, cattle herding, this kind of thing. Then, according to what I've read, when the war was over during the last part of the war, and this, you know, I can get the jitters, during the last part of the war, and in this period that you're just talking about, he really, he didn't make an about face, because I don't think he was that kind of a person, but he really did alter his approach to encourage the young people to learn occupations which would take them off the reservation. Do you think I have this correct?
Maybe, in a sense. When Willard Beatty first came in, the nation, I think, was in the last phases of the National Depression. Mm-hmm. And with the economic situation as it obtained on the reservation during the Depression years, there was a greatly diminished market for local produce, cheap wool, that sort of thing. Collier, you recall, came in 1933 with the intention of effectuating some of the recommendations of the Marion Committee, amongst them community development and education at a community level on the reservation rather than off-reservation mm-hmm. school operations, mm-hmm. because he felt, and the Merriam Committee felt, that community involvement in education would go a lot further in the direction of solving emergent problems than would mm-hmm. moving children to boarding schools in far distant locations.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole emphasis on education on the reservation in the late 1930s even was the development and operation of community schools, community involvement, and the use of various alphabetic organizations that came into existence during the Depression years to put a new base under the reservation economy, one that was based on wage work and employment to a greater extent than ever before, and then an emphasis on the reduction of dependence on livestock in view of the fact that it was held that the reservation couldn't support the livestock population necessary to in turn support all of the people.
This is just on the Navajo reservation, you're
saying? Well, that's all I'm speaking of, but right. I'm sure the same factors obtained elsewhere, mm-hmm. for that matter. So, yes, I would say that Beatty was primarily concerned with the use of education as a tool to accomplish these mm-hmm. purposes within the reservation itself. Well, as time passed and the Depression passed, the war went by, and capitalizing on the expanded experience of Navajo people, I think the emphasis in the education program then underwent change too, to meet a new set of circumstances. The circumstances weren't the same as they were during the Depression years. WPA, CCC, and all those organizations had passed mm-hmm. from the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the burdens of education became that of preparing Navajo young people to make their living anywhere they might desire, whether on or off the reservation, mm-hmm. and of course commensurate with opportunities for employment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even back in the 30s, all education, even in the boarding schools, was not in the direction of exclusively of preparing people to live on the reservation proper.
No, I have mentioned that.
A large part of it really
uh-huh.
was.
Uh-huh.
Phoenix, for example, had a dairy herd,
mm-hmm.
even within my own recollection, in the early 1940s. And Navajo young people were taught, you know, everything about taking care of dairy cattle, and milking them. And of course, the products from the dairy were utilized in the feeding of the young people in the school, just as they had been in the period of years that the Miriam Committee was concerned with, but with a different set of circumstances. It wasn't as bad as it was then.
It wasn't child labor.